All right, welcome back to episode 22 of the Fighter Pilot Professor. I am your host, Meta. Excited to be here. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about something that I alluded to before, which is America's imperial moment, as I'll phrase it, and specifically the Spanish-American War. And what does that have to do with anything that's going on right now? And then also we'll talk a little bit about what I'll call catching a break, right? We talked previously about mentorship from the to the protege's perspective, and this time we're going to talk about what it means to be a mentor. Hope you enjoy, and we'll dive right in. So in several previous episodes, I've discussed a little bit about the ideas of imperialism, and in the episode around Haiti, I discussed briefly the idea of America, what I phrased as American imperialism, and then I've touched on, in a few cases, the rules-based world order that is largely led by the United States and since World War II. And in my opinion, most people tend to frame the U.S.'s rise to power in terms of World War II. But, in my opinion again, right, like I think that there's actually a earlier spot that the United States begins its rise to power and actually achieves it. And that little incident centers around the Spanish-American War. So in case you are forgetting all of your history, which, you know, the Spanish-American War is not something that's often covered other than it's famous for Teddy Roosevelt and some other things that the music alludes to. And most people really only remember it for the sinking of the Maine, which sort of is the thing that starts off the American involvement in the Spanish Civil War. Bottom line is, in the 1890s, the United States and Spain come to blows around Spanish imperialism, specifically in the Western Hemisphere, and specifically on the island of Puerto Rico. So eventually this rises to a war between Spain and the United States. And the war actually first starts out in the Philippines when a U.S. fleet attacks a Spanish fleet in Manila, wins, and then seizes Manila Bay and the capital of Manila. Essentially, the war is over in the Philippines in the matter of a few days. The war on Puerto Rico lasts a little bit longer and involves not as much success, but the output of it is that the United States is victorious, gains control of the Philippines, gains control of Puerto Rico, and it makes Teddy Roosevelt famous and ultimately launches him upon his career to be the president. However, in my opinion, the big thing that comes out of the Spanish-American War is that the United States really secures its place as a global power for the first time. So if you think about it, the United States steadily expanded its territory throughout the 1800s across the North American continent, right? So we fight the Mexican-American War with Mexico and seize a huge piece of territory from Mexico. We early in the days of the Republic, we get the Louisiana Purchase from Spain, or excuse me, from France, which gives us a huge other piece of territory, right? And by the Civil War, the United States is the only de facto, the only power on the North American continent, or inside what we now call the continental United States. During the period following the Civil War, one thing that the United States does is consolidates its control by the conquest of the native tribes, primarily the Plains tribes, Comanches and Sioux, etc. And then by the 1890s, the frontier is declared closed, and the United States now controls the entirety of the continental United States. And you can remember things like Manifest Destiny from your time in school. However, following that, the United States begins to jump across the Pacific and has trading interests in places like China and Japan. In this era, the United States goes abroad and becomes sort of colonial, not necessarily colonial, but sort of imperialistically involved in Korea, Japan, and China. Opium War Wars and the Boxing Rebellion in China, the Great White Fleet in Japan, and the opening of Korea. Those are all things that bring the United States to the Pacific. And as we expand, or as the United States expands its interests in the Pacific, we take Hawaii as a territory, and eventually we fold it in as a state in the 1950s. And then we bring things like Wake Island, Midway, Guam, and the Philippines under the American fold, largely after the Spanish American War. And this is all in an effort to secure U.S. trading relationships and trading shipping lanes between the United States and Hong Kong, the United States, Japan, the United States, and Korea, etc. Right? And so it's really the Spanish-American War that secures the United States' foothold in the Pacific and brings it to its global power status. It also is sort of the last step, the Spanish-American War is sort of the last step of removing Spain from the Western Hemisphere, sort of leaves the United States as the sole power in the Western Hemisphere. And it's in this era around 1900 the United States embarks on a series of we'll call them small wars in Central America and in Latin America, which is going to lead to some of the imperial problems that we have, right? So this is the sort of American imperial moment, and it really is what launches the United States to its status as a global power. In the end, this is what brings the United States and Japan in conflict with each other. And frankly, this is what now brings the United States and China and other nations in conflict with each other in the Pacific. So there you go. So that's my opinion on it, on how the Spanish-American War is actually the United States' both imperial moment and its global power rising moment. Hope you enjoyed, and keep shooting your questions. In a previous episode, we talked a little bit about mentorship, right? And we talked about it from the protege's perspective. And today we'll talk a little bit about what it means from the mentor's perspective. And being a mentor is a big deal, in my opinion, right? I think as leaders, we have a obligation to the folks that work for us and around us to provide them with mentorship, right? And I believe that for a couple of reasons. The first one is like we talked about in the previous episode, I have to help people need help navigating the place that they are in, right? And understanding how to make decisions, how to find their way through all the obstacles that come up with them, right? And having gone through that, right, I can obviously provide them a lot of help in navigating those things so that they don't have to often struggle with some of the things that I struggled with, frankly. And the second thing that mentors can provide is what I'll call catch and a break. I believe that there are kind of some elements to success. One of them is hard work, right? One of them is talent. You can't be an untalented person and not be successful, right? You can't be unsuccessful and not put in the work to do it. We've talked a lot about that, right? But the third thing is catching a break. And, you know, even the most talented or hardworking people sometimes never catch a break and then thereby never succeed in doing the thing that they are trying to do because of it. So I feel as leaders and mentors, we often have the responsibility to help people get an opportunity, right? And often that comes in the guise of giving them a project, for lack of a better way to put it, right? Or giving them opportunities to succeed, as we call it in the military, right? Giving them tasks, increasing their levels of responsibility, right? And pouring into them as mentors, right? These are the breaks that people need that have talent, that are willing to put in the work. And now they just need a chance to prove themselves and given the opportunity to expand their scopes of responsibility and their opportunities, they will show you that they are indeed ready to move up in whatever it is organization that you work in and move on to bigger and better things, right? You know, these opportunities come in all kinds of stuff, right? You see them in stuff like Shark Tank, right? Shark Tank, the TV show Shark Tank is a great example of what it means to get an opportunity from somebody who's been there. But those come in much smaller packages, right? So what I would say as a mentor is not only do we have the responsibility to mentor the folks that work around us, right? But when we recognize that somebody is putting in the work and has the talent, we owe them the opportunity, and maybe owe them is a strong way. But, you know, I think in reality, if we're preparing the next generation of leaders, we need to give them opportunities to succeed. And I think as leaders, that's one of our biggest responsibilities, is not just to lead the organizations that we're in, but to indeed prepare the next generation of leaders for our organization. So the way that we do that is mentoring them through the hard times and giving them opportunities. Thanks for the question. Hope you enjoy. Have a good one. All right, so there we go. Wrapping up another episode of the Fighter Pilot Professor. Please follow me on Instagram, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and keep shooting me your questions. Have a good one.